Hello and welcome to Sigma Sports Presents Matt Stevens Unplugged. This week, my guest is none other than EF Education Nippo's Lachlan Morton. Blazing a trail as a road racing pro cyclist, but also an ultra endurance rider with a penchant for gravel. Basically, if it looks impossible, he'll do it and probably smash it in the process. The random question generator, the RQG, took us on some very interesting tangents involving evil geniuses and out-of-date power bars, while the hometown quiz focused on the nudist beaches of Port Macquarie, amongst other things. So, kick back, grab a brew or a tinny, stick your feet up. If I say stick your feet up, it doesn't matter. If you've got 4 feet, stick them up. If you're a spider that's watching, you'll probably have 6 feet, but maybe not if you're driving. I'll do that bit again. Just get going round and round. Oh, and no.
Oh, are you ready?
Because it's that time again. Matt Stevens Unplugged by Sigma Sports.
Yeah. Lachlan Morton grew up in rural Australia, where training rides consisted of out and backs, unless you... Stone Circle is back in June 2024. Forget your Glastonbury's and your Coachella's. This is the midsummer festival every gravel rider needs on their calendar. With three awesome routes, 55k, 155k and 220k's, there really is something for everyone. There's also a campsite with showers, hot food, cold beer, an optional fancy dress hill climb and lots of other fun stuff to make it the best weekend of 2024. Prices from £55, book Stone Circle today at hotchili.com and get a fiver off with the code PODCAST5. Hot Chili is spelled HOTCHILLE and .com is spelled full stop COM.
Took your road bike for an off-road loop, which is exactly what he did. Now riding for EF Education Nippo, Lachlan has found a team that affords him the opportunity to ride an alternative calendar, mixing his love of road racing with events like Dirty Kanza, Leadville 100, the GB Duro and Three Peaks Cyclocross. He's fast becoming one of the biggest names in gravel and ultra distance riding. But what does he know about Australian tribute bands and how strong is his knowledge on koala-based festivals in his hometown of Port Macquarie? Let's find out.
So we've finally made it after a few BEST, GMT and then the other one. And that's the building in the background. We can just hear rumbling, can't we?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, they've started, pulling out the floor or something next door. So, that's exactly what you can hear.
No worries, mate. It's just so we don't have listeners, to be alarmed, mate. Now, before we kick off, mate, as I said, thank you very much for joining us. I know you're a really busy guy. Could you tell us where in the world, or tell our listeners where in the world you are, and then describe kind of the scene around you, kind of what you're looking at in the room that you're in?
I'm in Girona, Catalonia, Spain, and it's raining outside. In an Airbnb, sort of quite close to the cathedral.
Okay.
So you can see the cathedral out the window. Pretty basic, you know, suitcases and bikes everywhere. Just standard setting.
Standard set. It's rainy. It's lovely here in London. Actually, the blue sky this morning, mate. So, that must be quite unusual for Girona this time of year.
Yeah, I mean, it's really green here. If you've ever been here, it's super green.
Which means
it does rain. Contrary to popular belief, it actually does rain quite a bit. Not like London, but we get our share of moisture, but I don't mind it, to be honest. Coming from Colorado this off season, you just get either snow or totally clear days. So a bit of rain's a nice little switch up.
Nice one, mate. Nice one. So would you call Girona you've been in Girona for a few years now. Would you call it your kind of second home, I guess?
Yeah, it's kind of, I guess, it's my base for when I'm in Europe racing. Sort of works out. I mean, generally it's about 6 months of the year.
Okay.
And then I sort of split the other time between Colorado and Australia when we can get back, although we haven't been able to get back there for a little while now.
No, of course. No, it's a difficult situation, isn't it? I mean, I know you've just – I was commentating actually, mate, on the Tour of the Alps. How did that go? Because that's been your first pro race of the year. So how was it for you?
Yeah.
How are you feeling?
I enjoyed it. it was quite a big gap between racing for me this year. I finished at the Giro last year, and so I had a real off season, which was nice. So I hadn't really had that in a few years, so it was good. And then it's kind of like, I mean, racing nowadays, it's like you feel like you improve that little bit, and you come back the next season to be like, all right, you know, I've stepped it up a little bit. But the whole level's just risen. So you have to step it up more or less just to stay in the same place.
Yeah. I mean,
I really enjoy, getting in there racing with the guys, and it's like, it's fun. I mean, because I do a bit less of it now, I really enjoy it when I get the chance to go and like meet up with the team and get into that kind of like intense welter environment.
I think that's a really interesting point, because you've got this, let's face it, you've got this pretty unorthodox but very, very cool approach to being a pro bike rider, and your team, as we know, as we talked about before, has given you this freedom to do so. I think it's wonderful, but it's really important to do what you do for a living and really enjoy it, because, you know, being a pro sometimes, as you well know, mate, you know, you go from race to race, you can end up, there's a danger sometimes that you can end up actually kind of almost despising what you do, just dragging yourself out of bed. It's this horrible kind of routine, but you seem to have really kind of struck that kind of almost perfect kind of balance, which is a delicate and kind of a difficult thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's very easy to like take what we do for granted, because ultimately it is your job.
Yeah.
So, you know, the second you're required to do it and you feel like you're not doing it for your own reasons or on your own terms, it can be difficult. But, I don't know. I feel like because I've sort of stepped away for periods of time, I sort of have the perspective now that it is such a good job to have, as long as you keep, you know, the right perspective, which for me means, I guess, like doing a little bit less of it, because I want to sort of stay fresh to it in a way.
Yeah.
And it's great because in a lot of ways, you know, every time I turn up for a race, I feel feels like my first year again. You know, you're kind of like picking the little things up again. And I mean, I know for me personally, I don't think I could do it like only road racing full time anymore. I think I think that would burn me out. So yeah, I don't know. I feel lucky. I'm sort of in a position where I can mix and match a bit. And also, like, I think it's just being honest with yourself.
Yeah.
You know, as far as like what you can tolerate, and like how you're going to get the most out of yourself while still, you know, like enjoying your 20s.
Yeah. Oh, God, yeah, and you're still there, mate. You're holding on by the skin of your teeth, aren't you, to your 20s? I know you got like that.
Yeah, just.
You're 29, so 2nd of January. So, hey, you got another kind of nearly a year of being in your 20s.
Yeah, exactly.
Mate. But you want, you know, the kind of area that you excel in this sport as well, the endurance side of it, is something that you could quite easily argue you could continue getting better for a long time, you know, if you because it's – the endurance side of any sports, you can see there's a lot of older athletes doing exceptionally well. So, and you could end up doing this for, you know, well into your kind of 40s, mate, you know, if you kind of wanted to, I guess, and if you keep the balance right, never kind of fall out of love with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think especially with the endurance side, it's so much of it's just experience, you know?
Yeah.
Which, you know, the more you do, the quicker you get, just because you're able to manage yourself better. But I think like the key to going longer, is just having the passion for it.
Yeah.
So like currently I'm sort of jumping between disciplines. So I'm always working. I'm never really like mastering anything. Right. I feel like I'm constantly chasing something.
Yeah.
Which is actually, it's a nice way to be, to not be good at something. Because as a professional cyclist, you spend most of your time doing something you're supposed to be really good at.
Yeah.
So there's like an expectation. So it's fun to like do something you're not particularly good at and go through that like learning process. It's like it's super rewarding.
I mean, that's very. I know what you mean, Lachlan, but that's kind of very, very modest of you. You are very good at it, but you're broader, aren't you? How would you describe yourself? Like this kind of enormous Australian kind of Swiss Army knife with loads of different kind of things that you can just fold out, and it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger.
I guess so. I'll take that.
So you talked about, you know, you've had you did Tour of the Alps, so that started on the 19th. Some other, obviously you did the kind of two up earlier this year, didn't you? With Alex. Talk to me about that, because that looked really, really fascinating. It's an event I've never heard of. So for anybody who's kind of again listening in and wondering what I'm talking about, can you describe that event? Because it kind of, you decided quite late in the day to do it, didn't you?
Yeah. Housie stitched me up a bit. it's a gravel event in Boulder. And generally it's like a mass start.
Old Man Winter, it's called, isn't it? It's just gonna get the name in there. Yeah.
Yeah, Old Man Winter. And yeah, it's essentially like a 100K gravel event. But this year they set it up so you had like 2 weekends to go and set a time on the course.
Okay.
And with the idea, I think it was maximum of six person groups. But Alex had done it a couple of times as a mass start event and never won it. So he was kind of like, maybe a day or two before, oh, do you want to come do this ride? And I didn't really realize that like we were going to be going like so hard. It was basically like, you know, he drove down the hill to my place and then we rode out to do it. And it was like a 100K two-man time trial.
Wow, that's brutal, mate.
And it was brutal. Yeah, it was absolutely brutal. And I'd ridden some of the harder sections the day before. And at that point there was no snow. So I said to Alex, I was like, oh, let's just do it on the road bikes. Like no mountain bike pedals or anything. And then of course it snowed overnight. So we ended up like, we both hit the deck and like, it was a good day out.
Yeah.
But yeah, he should have been the winner, but there was a glitch in the timing. So it got awarded to me, which is pretty funny in the end because he's still losing.
That's very, very cool. So basically, so what kind of, and I've been to Boulder many, many years ago, actually, doing some altitude training when I was back in the 90s. Beautiful, beautiful place. Would love to come back. So whereabouts, was the course a hilly one or was it pretty flat? What was the parkour like?
It's like a mixture because in Boulder you're kind of like right against the edge of where the Rockies start.
Yeah.
So you do half the course in like the rolling foothills and farm roads, which are quite flat but all nice, like really smooth sort of dirt surface. And then it ventured up into the hills and I think there's a 2 or 3 mile section of single track,
okay,
which is quite high as well, like sort of up over 2,000 meters,
right.
And that's kind of the crux of the event. Right. So you climb up to the start of that for 10 miles in the canyon, and then you've got to get up and over that, and it gets like quite icy and snowy that time of year.
Right. Okay.
So. Yeah, that's sort of the most difficult part. And then you descend back out of the mountains and have another couple of small climbs before you get back to the farm roads and back to lines. So, yeah, it's a really nice event. And it was good to get involved in like a local event again, because it's sort of, you know, event organizers have had such a difficult year. It's really nice when someone can actually pull it off in a way that was sort of safe for the participants. I feel like as a a cyclist or just an athlete in general now, even if you're sort of recreational, it's kind of, it's a bit of your duty to go and do these events, just because, you know, it's been such a difficult year for people trying to put them on.
And it was just at a time as well. I mean, there's no ideal time for this pandemic at all, was there? But it was just at a time when the kind of like the gravel side of things was really gaining a lot of momentum, wasn't it? As well, it's kind of always been there for the last few years, but it was just getting bigger and bigger. And then suddenly it was kind of almost had its legs taken away from it, you know, as well as other events. But yeah, it's a really to get stuck in and support them. Yeah, massively important.
Yeah. And I mean, I think, I still think the gravel scene in the US is going to blossom once it, you know, once events start happening again.
Yeah.
Just because the format is so, it makes so much more sense for organizers in the US. It's so much easier to put on an event somewhere quiet, off main roads. So I think that boom's going to continue. But yeah, it's going to involve people getting back out there and supporting these events.
Definitely.
Ultimately, that's why we all do it. You know?
Indeed. There's something. Oh.
Random question alert.
What? I'm sorry, mate. Here we go. It's kicking off.
It is for a random question.
right, yeah, sorry about that, Lachlan. As you probably heard, we've got the guys at Sigma Sports came into my loft about 6 months ago and put in this really old computer. It's enormous. And every now and again on a podcast, it fires out a randomly generated question. I've never seen the questions before, and I've just torn it off. It's like on old fax paper. And here it is. Okay, Lachlan, if you had to complete, and I'm literally reading this fresh, if you had to complete one video game with your feet, which one would it be? Now, the stakes are high, like your family have been taken hostage or something. I'm really sorry about that. That's pretty heavy duty. So which video game could you have the confidence to complete with your feet?
I'd love to meet the criminal mastermind that took someone's family hostage and then is demanding that you play a video game. They're probably quite funny if you actually got to know them. I don't know if you remember Alex the Kid. It was like when you had a Sega, the Sega Mega Drive, it came with one game built in, which was Alex the Kid. So I think I played that game more than any other because we didn't really have many other games.
It was just
on the console. So Alex the Kid, that would be the game.
Can you bring? I'm looking at a Sega Mega Drive at the moment. We've got like a shelving unit in our loft, and it's just full of retro computer consoles. So I'm looking at it, but I've never played that. My wife's a massive gamer. So what would it involve? So how dexterous are your feet? Would it be? Are you?
Well, it's basically there's only four directions. You can up, down, left, right. Cool. So I feel like I could probably manage that with one right foot and then have like the left foot kind of wedge that controls so it doesn't move. How I'm imagining it. I can't say I've ever put it into practice.
I mean, fair play, Lachlan. There's a lot of confidence there. And bear in mind, your family are being held hostage and, you know, so, you know, there's a lot at stake there. Great stuff. And I do agree, we'd probably need to kind of try and find out who this criminal mastermind is because that's quite a creative one. Thanks very much. There might be a couple of those later on and I do not know when they're going to arise. So thank you very much.
Okay,
moving up, changing pace. Let's rewind a bit, Lachlan. What's your first... Your first ever memory of throwing your leg over a bike and riding as a kid?
I think it was probably back home. And I remember my dad taking like one of the training wheels off my bike. When we were learning, he would take the left one off so you could still sort of balance on the right.
Yeah.
That's like the first time I can remember, and like the day when he did that, and then I sort of rode that for a few hours, and then he took the other one off, and I could ride it.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
I think that's my earliest memory, but yeah, we used to sort of make like little tracks around our house,
yeah,
and we were like at that time we were really big into like motor racing.
Okay.
So, you know, we were like pretending we were F1 cars or like, you know, MotoGP riders.
Yeah.
It wasn't like a cycling thing, but that was sort of like the fastest thing we could do.
I mean, I do. I mean, I think a lot of us, you know, have grown up and ended up, you know, being in the industry at some point, did that as kids. And they're really fond memories. And that's why they kind of stick in your mind, like creating like little kind of jumps. There was always generally a jump because my kind of hero back then. I was really into kind of Formula One in the 70s and stuff and motor racing, but also Evel Knievel. I used to try and do jumps at like Evel Knievel. It's like a plank of wood and then one brick. And if you got really confident, they'd be like two bricks, you know, stuff like that.
We used to dig our jumps into the ground. You'd kind of like come down into it and then launch out and land. So you wouldn't land quite as high, I guess.
Right.
But that was sort of the easiest way for us to build jumps.
Probably my mum and dad wouldn't let me dig the lawn.
We were on a farm, so like we had room. And there were enough places that you could, you know, tear the grass up that mum and dad seen.
So at what point then, I mean, did you start to kind of become aware then? I mean, as kids, most of us have got a real kind of sense of inquisitiveness and adventure. At what point did you start venturing a little bit further afield on your bike and think, this is kind of really, really, this is maybe what I want to do?
Well, we joined like the local cycling club, which like for the size of our town was actually like a really big, strong club.
Right.
And that's when I decided that like I needed to go out training.
Okay.
And so like I think when I first headed out on the road, I was only allowed to go like 5Ks down the road and back to where the road turned to dirt and then I could come back.
Right.
I don't know. It was something like I would do it myself. So it was like a big feeling of like independence, I guess, as like a 9 or 10 year old, like leaving home to go ride. And then I guess that like sense of achievement, and I'd always do it before school. So I really like that feeling of like, you kind of like, you got to school and you'd already done so much, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that was like where I really like sort of fell in love with it. And then it just grew from there, like starting to look at maps and seeing how far I could go and different loops you could make. And like in country Australia, you're pretty limited as to like what you can ride that's paved.
Yeah.
It's basically all out and backs. So after like, you know, 5 years of doing out and back, I started to loop stuff and realized that you could ride a road bike on the dirt. And then that kind of, you know, I think the next big step from there was when I went like, put a backpack on and went one way from Port Macquarie to like Walker.
Right.
And then rode from Walker then to Sydney.
Okay.
So that was probably the next, I guess, evolution of that.
I mean, just to put it in a bit of perspective for people, it's Port Macquarie, wasn't it, where you were brought up as a kid in New South Wales in Australia, wasn't it? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, do you know what? I'm going to do the quiz now. I'm going to do the Port Macquarie quiz because it's just kind of nice. Let's do it. I've done a little bit of research. It's kind of tenuous research on Port Macquarie. So Lachlan Morton, let's fire up the theme tune. It's time for the Port Macquarie quiz.
The Port Macquarie quiz. The Port Macquarie quiz. Yeah. Now it's time for the Port Macquarie quiz.
Yeah, mate, we are. I mean, the budget. I mean, I tell you what, pal. And Niall has got bookings already for like DJ sets. In Ibiza later in the year. Okay.
Yeah, I reckon the Port Mac Tourism Board might pick that one up. It's a shame to let that one go to waste.
That's got to be. Well done, Noel. One of my favourites, that one, mate. Okay. So I've just got three questions here, but it's multiple choice. So I'm not going to, you know, it's a worst case scenario. You just guess. There's no hassle. Yeah. We're not trying to show you up. Okay. So question number one, Lachlan. Actually, when's the last time you were there? That's not part of the quiz. It's just like, you know.
Yeah. 2 years ago now.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Blimey.
Just over 2 years.
Right. 2 years ago. Okay. Yeah. Well, hopefully these will be kind of relatively, you know, actually, I don't know how often you go on the Port Macquarie website, but we'll soon find out. Anyway, here we go. Question number one. What is the only non-official clothing optional beach in Port Macquarie?
Okay. Nobby's Beach.
No.
Miners Beach.
Oh, you've got it. Yeah, I was going
to
say.
Yeah. So you have to walk around from Nobby's Beach, and it's funny because like you go into a new beach and it's called Nobby's, but yeah, it's Miners Beach.
I like the fact.
Actually, the last time I was there, I did go. I went to Miners. It's quite nice because you have to like walk around to get to it, so it's quite quiet, and it's not like. It's not like you're overrun by naked people,
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, I like the way they call it. I mean, back in the day, you'd call it like a nudist beach, but now it's like non-official
clothing optional.
That's such a cool 21st century term, isn't it? Jesus, fantastic. Yeah. I was going to give you. I mean, I'm going to give you a bonus point because you didn't need the other questions. I was going to go for Rocky Beach, North Shore, Nobby's Beach and Miners Beach, and obviously there's a wonderful irony that you already picked up on that. In fact, Nobby's Beach isn't the nudist one. Fantastic! No, so two points. Yeah.
Contrary to popular belief, indeed. Nobby's is not the nudist beach.
Okay, here we go. Question number two: what is the name of the annual koala festival held on the June long weekend in Port Macquarie? Okay, is it? Ooh. Hey koalas, hello koalas, g'day koalas, or we are koalas festival. So it's one of those.
G'day koalas.
You reckon it's g'day koalas?
Yeah.
It's not. I created that one. It's actually hello koalas.
Okay. I do not know that. Port Macquarie has the only koala hospital in Australia.
Yeah. Yeah.
But. I didn't know about the actual festival.
Yeah, you need to, next time you're down there on the June long weekend, maybe speak to JV, say, look, I don't really fancy the Tour of Swiss or the Dauphiné. I want to go to the Koala Festival and maybe.
I would love to be a Tour of Swiss, but it's quite a big event on
back home.
It's got duck
backboard. Exactly. Okay, so final question. Okay. Next May, so in May 2022, Lachlan, which famous Australian covers band will play in Port Macquarie at the Glass House? Okay. Ooh. So these are a world famous Australian covers band. Okay. Is it A, the Australian Pink Floyd? Is it B, the Aussie Beatles? Is it C, the Australian Michael Jackson Experience? Or is it D, the Australian Bee Gees?
I think it's Pink Floyd.
It's not Pink Floyd. No. They are an actual band, as you correctly said. The Aussie Beatles, there probably is one, but I made that up. I also made up the Australian Michael Jackson Experience. I don't know why, I just did.
It's
the Australian Bee Gees. Yeah, they're coming over.
Have they got a special name? Is it like, is there a
They're
pun?
Just called the, weirdly.
They just called the Australian Bee Gees.
Yeah.
That's good.
They've gone out on a limb and been super creative with the name.
I thought some of the original Bee Gees were from Australia.
They are. I think they were born in Australia, then lived in England for a long time, the Bee Gees, I think, didn't they? But
yeah, so, I mean, how can you just call yourself the Australian Bee Gees when the original were Australian?
That's a bloody good point. I don't know, mate. Maybe have a word if you can get tickets. They are on the website.
BJ's
too. Oh, so basically, you've got 2 points from three, which works out at 77%, because you've got the bonus, roughly. So well done.
Nice.
Okay. Nice one, mate.
I am a local. Great.
Just a bit of added information about the Australian Bee Gees. They've just signed a 5-year residency in Las Vegas at one of the big hotels. Yeah,
really?
That's they've just signed a 5-year. Mate, the amount of research I put into this podcast. Yeah,
so it's a big deal that the Glass House has secured them.
Exactly, and it's May 1st. It's May 1st, 2022. Again, if you get picked for the Giro, just say, "Oh, I've got a bit of an injury. I'm just going to head up back home to recuperate," and you can catch the Aussie.
Exactly. It's basically the Coachella of the Mid North Coast.
Exactly, mate. So I'm glad you enjoyed the quiz, mate. So yeah, well done. Some random questions there. Right. Okay. I'm just having a little look. Okay. How about this then? Tell me, Lachlan, about the bike that hasn't yet been invented.
Yeah.
So it hasn't been invented, but you've got a kind of unlimited budget. What would it look like if you had to build a bike to just do anything? The kind of thing you do. I mean, I know you're sponsored by Cannondale, and their bikes are pretty decent. I've ridden one. But ultimately, if you were to sit down and design it, I mean, with like wing mirrors, cup holders, all sorts of cool stuff. What would it look like?
Yeah, I think that's a tough one. I mean, I think if you could somehow create like a larger travel mountain bike, like a 130 or 150 mil sort of travel mountain bike that felt like a light cross country bike, for me, that would be like the dream. But then also, like, I think if you could create like a bike for endurance races, you know, when you strap a bunch of bags and stuff on, every little bit more weight you add to the bike, it just diminishes the ride quality. So like you're constantly sort of trying to like thread this line between having everything you need and then being as light as possible. So I think if you could create a bike that was designed around having weight on it and doing it in a way that's not just like strapping a bunch of like different bags to the bike, like, I don't know, maybe creating spaces and storage compartments that are designed to be flush with the bike. So that it would actually still maintain its like ride qualities when you have a bunch of gear on it, and it would also help you keep like organized. Because like when you've got a bunch of things like shoved in a handlebar roll, it's one thing to like get it in there and put it on the bike, but then once you're like, oh shit, like my hands are cold and my gloves are in the middle of that handlebar.
Oh,
bag.
God,
gotta,
yeah,
like,
yeah.
Pull my mat out, you know. That I would love that.
Yeah.
I'm sure it'll get there.
Yeah. Like, well, that's the thing, the kind of thing you do at any given point. I mean, if you look at the kind of stuff like the Enduro, like the GB Enduro, when you're basically riding through the night for a few days in a row, at any given point, wherever you put something, even if you prioritize it, there'll be a time in the day when you don't need it in that position. It's almost as if you need a kind of some sort of storage system that is like run by an app that rotates from like a time perspective. So there's like a night and day. So it just rotates the stuff that's within the compartments.
Yeah. And then like it gives you reminders to like charge your lights and stuff, because I always get caught out with that sort of thing.
Was it Badlands last year where your light ran out after half an hour?
No, I was on the Kirkapelli Trail.
Oh, the Kirkapelli Trail, right, okay.
So I just rode. I was like, it was super difficult. Like, I was kind of like the light died and it was still probably like 45 minutes before sunrise. And you know when you're doing that thing, if you're like, yeah, yeah, it's fine. But then, like, you know, there's certain situations where you're like, hang on a minute, I can't see anything.
I've done that a few times.
It's bad enough on
the Colorado Trail. I had to like tape my phone to my handlebar bag, like with the stupid little torch on, because that was the only way I could finish the Colorado Trail.
I mean, you laugh about that, and because it is kind of absurd, but I guess there's been many, many, when you look at the kind of things that you've, I mean, and most people listening to this will know what you've done in terms of the adventure side of things. You've done some pretty amazing stuff. I mean, it's really, really intriguing. But that question, I mean, that little incident with the phone there, can you then tell us what your most MacGyver moment has been? You know, and you're like, because you're on your own. I mean, I know sometimes you might have a film crew with you or nearby or something, because obviously somebody's taking shots and stuff, but essentially you're on your own. So what, have you ever had something pretty catastrophic that's happened with your kit or your bike and you've really had to MacGyver the hell out of it and you've been done it and it's worked? What's your proudest MacGyver type moment?
I mean, that was a pretty good one with the torch and the tape. And like sort of just working out what you have on hand. And the Kokopelli Trail, I sent this one descent too hard. It was quite rocky and I broke my rim. And so, like, all the sealant was coming out of the actual physical rim. So I had to pull it apart, put a tube in it, and, like, put an inlay of, like, cardboard inside so the tube wouldn't come out of the rim.
Sure.
But to do that, like, you know when you run tubeless, you have the valve, like, that's screwed in.
Yes.
It's not attached to a tube. And Tom Hopper, who, like, always sets up my adventure bike stuff. He's obviously got like significantly stronger finger strength than I do.
Right.
And I couldn't get them done. And like I was going for like a record. So at this point I knew I was like whatever. I was 20 minutes up on the record and I'm sitting there and I just couldn't unscrew this tiny little washer to get the valve off. And, like, it was taking, like, a comically, like, to the point where I was like, I think I'm going to have to, like, abandon because I don't have strong enough fingers. And in the end, I was, like, thinking, and it was, like, it's totally in the desert. There's this super fine, like, dust on the trail. And I was thinking of, like gymnastics to chalk the hands up.
Yeah.
So I used this super fine dirt to, like, chalk up my fingers. And it was like my last ditch attempt, and it worked. Like
it worked.
Yeah, it gave my fingers the grip strength to get the valve off.
Wow, that's pretty good lateral thinking there, mate. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like, it's not like I had to do something super technical, but like honestly, it took me like 10 minutes to get this valve, and I was like laughing at myself because I'm like, I actually can't continue if I don't get this stupid valve. But yeah, it worked out.
Good stuff. And that's a good tip for anybody else who kind of needs an added bit of purchase. If you're riding a trail, get some dust on your hands.
Exactly.
You need to write
fingertips.
I think you need to make a note of all these, mate. Lachlan Morton, MacGyver survival guide. Just every little kind of tip, you know, what you can use. I mean, that's the classic one as well. You know, using cardboard to seal the inside if you've got a split in your tyre. I think all of us have done that.
Yeah.
Hot Chili's London to Paris gravel adventure is a breathtaking 3-day ride that will stay with you forever. Trundle down towpaths, cruise across farm tracks, meander through woodlands, and take in the scenery on a route that's almost entirely off-road all the way from the Thames to the Seine. In fact, the route into Paris was designed by Sofiane Sahili, the king of French gravel, so you can be confident it's the best possible off-road route to the Eiffel Tower. The Hot Chili Ride Captains will be there to show you the way, whilst the experienced event crew look after everything else so you can relax and truly enjoy the adventure. Treat yourself to a well-earned massage at lunch or at the end of each day, then relax over dinner and get a good night's kip at 3-star and 4-star hotels. Make September 2024 the highlight of your calendar and head to hotchili.com to find out more about the hot chili difference. Psst, podcast listeners can get 50 quid off entry. Just use the code PODCAST50 at the checkout, but don't tell anyone that doesn't listen to the podcast, okay?
I think my best one, mate, if you don't mind me saying, and one that I'm very, very proud of, it was kind of 1999, and it was when we were riding with the stems with the kind of, you know, the four bolts at the front to kind of, like, yeah. There's a front clamp. And basically, somehow, that just sheared off. So my handlebars were completely, they're only being held on by the SDI cables and the brakes. So I had these, and it cracked and broke. I didn't fall, luckily, but basically, I had this set of handlebars still attached to my bike by the cables and then the stem. And it's like, how am I going to get home now? It's like, oh my God. I didn't have a mobile phone. So what I did, I got an inner tube and I basically bound them together using an inner tube really, really tightly. I'm pulling it back. So it kind of bound it. And eventually, and it was like wrapped around the stem loads of time and like knotted up and then back, and then tied again. And if you stretch an inner tube, it's pretty long. So I managed to bind it all. And then I rode, then I just kind of redistributed a lot of my weight right over the back of the saddle. So, and then had my arms really long. I looked like Steve Bauer in Paris-Roubaix, like 1990 on that ridiculous bike. Yeah. But it kind of gave me a little bit of suspension. So I had like a bit of a kind of elastomer situation going on with my handlebars. But I got home. I was well chuffed with that, mate. Yeah. So if you ever break your handlebars, mate, inner tubes, very, very good.
Tubes can be used for a lot of things.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, I reckon they're underrated, mate. And that's why I know the tubeless tech's amazing, but have a couple of inner tubes. Just you know, you just never know, do you?
The other day I had to, I was short like a spacer, you know, on the steerer.
Yeah.
And because I'd switched stems on my mountain bike and it meant I needed like another, say, 5 mil spacer, which I didn't have. So I used like some quarters, like some coins, I used like 3/4 either side of the of the steerer, and then tightened down the cap, and it worked fine. And I'd sort of like forgotten about it, and then I rode past my mate's. He's got like a little bike workshop in Boulder. And right. He was like, what the hell is this? And I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot that. the old coin spaces. And he was just like, take those out right now. Yeah, that was another good one.
Coin space. I mean, I bet it actually looked quite tricky as well, like quite bespoke.
Yeah, it was a bit like the when you used to put the card in the spokes. Kind of like,
yeah. definitely, mate, definitely. Hold on a minute. Oh, there's another one incoming.
Random question alert.
Sorry about this.
Random question alert. Random question alert.
All languages.
It is time for a random question.
Okay, I've just torn it off. This is a good one. Okay, Lachlan, what would be the worst buy one get one free sale of all time?
Oh, buy one get one free sale.
Yeah. So, what's the worst one? You know, like you get the bog offs, don't you? Buy one get one free. What would be the worst one?
Maybe like expired power bars. Do you remember the expired power bars?
Expired power bars. Yeah.
You remember how like when they went out of date, they were like actually impossible to eat.
Yeah.
Like it was just so hard.
I'm going to flip it round. I'm going to play devil's advocate here, Lachlan. If you did sort of buy one get one free on out of date power bars, you could probably use one to kind of fix your bike at some point, because it's like malleable concrete, isn't it?
Like a couple of tire levers.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. You could definitely use them as a spacer. You could just like pop your kind of your fork crown through it, you know, and you could, I reckon, underrated, mate, a little bit of kit, you know, and in worst case scenario, you'd eat it. But I mean, no offense to Powerbar if they're listening. I mean, we love your stuff, but we think when it's out of date.
No, I mean the original Powerbar, like the first
back in the day. I mean, they were
like when it was like it was considered like the only food for riding. That was the only option, really. No one else was doing it. And like to be fair, they were good.
I used to love power bars. I mean, that they were, even back then, I mean, they were quite expensive, but in a good way, and they were a bit of a treat. If you got a power bar on a ride or somebody gave you a power bar on a ride, it's like, whoa, this is pretty funky. And I used to like peeling back the foil on it, and they somehow had this ridiculous, they were shiny, weren't they? That's the one thing I liked about
them. It was like space food.
Yeah. Really, yeah, they were funky. They were a funky bit of kit, and they still are, you know. Fair play to
I remember seeing, like, one of the first tours I ever watched must have been, like, 2002 or 3.
Yeah.
And seeing one of the riders from Seiko had it, like, he'd eaten half the power bar and then just stuck the other half to his stem.
Yeah, that was like, the thing. We used,
I started to do it, and it was quite gross. Like, I guess if you're getting your bike washed every day, it's fine. But like my stem would get super sticky, and then you also you're peeling this like hot power bar off your stem to eat. I think it looked cooler than the actual reality of it.
Yeah, and from the amount of stuff, because they were quite tacky, weren't they? They were like they attracted sort of dust. You got a few insects on there and stuff like that. Looked like a Garibaldi biscuit by the time you'd finished. Oh, blimey. Yeah, we've gone off on a tangent there. Lachlan, what does few? Let's forward wind to 2030. Okay. You're still, you're still doing what you're doing. You're still the best in the world at it, but you're starting to design your own kind of courses. So I'm asking you this, what does the Lachlan Morton Challenge event look like?
I think I've thought about this a lot. It's like, how do you create like the Barclay Marathon of cycling, it's Barclay Marathon's like this ridiculous running event in the US that involves like doing loops. And it's like obviously physically very demanding, but you have to navigate. I think for me it would involve like a series of loops that just get harder and harder. And so it's basically there is no finish.
It's like a Mobius strip of cycling.
Exactly. Like you get a clear month out of the schedule. But I also like the idea of like doing the same loop. So it's like a 200K loop with a mixture of some off road, a bit of tar, just like a complete mix. So there's no ideal bike. Something's going to thrive in one part of the course and be, a handicap in another.
Yeah.
But kind of involving, like, you have to finish within a percentage of the first person to complete that lap.
Okay.
So you would have different strategies where people are like, all right, I'm going to try and do one lap but really fast. To cut a bunch of these ultra guys in the first lap, but then basically it just continues, continues until there's one person and no one's finished within that percentage of their lap.
Wow, that's pretty. Yeah. That's pretty competitive.
I know. I've had a lot of time.
I can see you like twirling your mustache. Maybe you're the kind of criminal mastermind that wanted to ask that question earlier on with an event like that.
Yeah, exactly.
I
think like it would be an event that involves, it's not like one discipline.
Okay.
It's like a combination of all the different aspects of bike riding.
Right. And whereabouts in the world would you have you kind of thought about a location or a series of? I suppose you could do a series of events in different kind of locations, couldn't you? Which would be cool.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of cool places you could do it. Like, I mean, the Rockies is probably one of my favorite places to ride in Colorado. But I also think here in like the volcanic region between Girona and where the Pyrenees probably start.
Okay.
Because there's a huge variety of trails and terrain, and it's quite harsh when you get off-road. And you also have access. Like you can go most places, which is, you know, not the case in every country. So, yeah, I think this would be a good area to do it.
Cool. I mean, talking about, among different countries, where in the world have you got your kind of eye on that you'd like to kind of ride and do something kind of epic? Because you've ridden all over the place, but a lot of them are quite well-beaten kind of tracks, aren't they, or pre-existing yeah. events. And I watched with interest your brother actually recently. He rode across Iceland, didn't he? That looked, on those fat bikes, it looked amazing. I mean, he had like a proper guide and stuff, and if anybody hasn't seen that stuff, it's worth checking it out. But have you got like a challenge at the back of your mind that at some point you'd like to go for?
I think the route that inspires me the most at the moment is probably the Tour Divide route. So from Canada down to Mexico, following the Rockies.
Okay. Yeah.
I think that's like, as far as routes go, that's one I really want to do. But I think, I've got this theory that'd be really fun to like, bikepack in Japan.
Okay.
Just because I think it would be like quite easy. You would like logistically.
Yeah.
Because like you constantly have like vending machines like everywhere. The people are so nice that I feel like you could probably set up camp in most places and no one's really going to bother you.
Yeah.
And there's actually like a surprising amount of like for a country that has such a, you know, high population, there's a lot of beautiful areas you get out sort of, and it's quite remote. So, yeah, I feel like I really want to go and bikepack in Japan, but without like any set route, just sort of go and do it for a month.
Just explore, just basically get out there and just see where the road takes you. Yeah.
Yeah. And then just sort of wait on people to give you tips on maybe where to go next. It'd be cool.
I mean, that's essentially what riding's all about, isn't it, for us? You know, like you go back to one of my earlier questions to you about, as you got a little bit older, you're allowed to go a bit further afield. Initially, your mum said 5Ks out and that's your limit. But we all want to kind of explore, whether it's kind of countryside on our bikes, whether it's kind of your interest in arts or whatever, music, we all kind of want to explore. And sometimes you don't want it mapped out. You just want to just find your own way. And that's a real lovely reminder of the first, you know, that while we all ride bikes, I guess, I mean, you're competitive, you know, I was competitive, but now I just like just riding around. And if I want to go hard, I'll go hard. If not. And I think the exploration thing, as I've got older, I'm kind of more childlike in the way that I'm riding. It's really quite wonderful.
Yeah. And I mean, with the technology we have now, it's pretty crazy. You know, you could be halfway around a loop and then pull out your phone and map a totally new and different route home you had no idea about, just like with your phone. And the gear is so good now. Like, I just feel like, you know, there was a time when you probably had to be quite experienced to like take it on. And sure, if you're going to like cross Iceland in the winter, like you've got to have a pretty solid game plan and quite a bit of experience. But, you know, you can get out there and explore, you know, in your backyard now with the different apps and like different ways to navigate rides and then, you know, just the equipment, it's quite accessible now.
Yeah, no, it certainly is. I mean, it certainly opened things up, isn't it? I mean, just looking back over the kind of stuff that you've done, I mean, what, I mean, because you really have done some stuff that's kind of been absolutely brutal. What has been the one that has taken you the kind of into the darkest places? I mean, not just through the nighttime when your lights
are
out, into your psyche, and you're like, because we've all been there, generally when you're suffering in the cold or whatever, like, why am I riding my bike? So, but where have you, I mean, cycling generally takes you to good places. That's why we do it. But, you know, on the odd occasion, I'd imagine the stuff that you've done, you've been in some pretty dark places. What's been the toughest to overcome? What ride?
Colorado Trail was by far the most difficult thing I've done. And that kind of goes with the way I approached it. I didn't do a huge amount of research. I just kind of was like, oh, I'll go do this. And it turns out it's probably one of the most difficult routes you can ride.
Right.
So, yeah, that broke me down a lot. And it was great because it was like super, super humbling just to get through it.
Right.
But I still think, like, racing has the capacity to take you to, like, the darkest places, I think.
Yeah.
You know, if you're doing, like, a tour, like a grand tour or a week-long tour or something, and, you know, maybe you're not riding as well as you want to, or, like, the stage is you're on a bad day and, you know, the brake's taking 60K to go. I feel like there's nothing quite as intense as racing to like really make you like get to that dark place and question what you're doing. And it's funny because like you could be sitting on the team bus, like drinking a coffee and laughing with your teammates, and then half an hour later be like, you know, I'm done with this and quit. Worst thing ever. And then, you know, come around and have like a great finish to the stage and be like, oh, I love this. I'll do this for another 10 years. I feel like racing is the only thing that really does that. And when you do it at like the highest level, all of that is, you know, amplified.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, really quite interesting. I mean, when you think about just the very nature of racing, you know, the competitive nature, regardless of your aims and ambitions or the team's plan for that particular day, ultimately, you know, unless you're the team that's got the stranglehold on the race and you're to a degree dictating, but that's never 100%. Everything in a race is outside of your control. And although what you're doing in your endurance stuff, you know, it's the environment, the kind of, you know, the, I guess the weather conditions, your kind of general, you know, state of being will dictate. Ultimately, it's you that are in control of the pace that you're riding at. If you push yourself hard, it's generally because you know you can do it. But in a bike race, it's just like being thrown into the sea on a stormy day. Do you know what I mean? And you're just like, especially if you're not on a super, super day, it is you have no control. And that when that control is taken away and you're suffering, it's quite bewildering. It's not nice, is it?
No, it can be terrible. And as you said, like in an ultra, as difficult as it can be, you have that control, and it's up to how you're going to tackle the situation. Where, you know, if you're in a world tour race that starts up a 10K climb, you can't get dropped there, you know, because your race is over. Like, and you have to ride as fast as everyone else is going to ride. So sometimes, especially if it's a bad day, it's a bit like you're the fish that's been caught, you know, you've been hooked and you're getting dragged along. And like dragged along and reeled in.
That's a good way of putting it.
So, like, I don't think there's anything that really compares to that. And it's hard to explain to people who haven't experienced it. Like, you can be so desperate in a race, even though, you know, it looks just like professional sport. It's like you could be going through a very distressing, emotional period in that stage.
Oh no, without a shadow of a doubt. I mean, that takes us quite nicely onto the Giro. I mean, you obviously rode the Giro last year. That was your first Giro, wasn't it? I think that was your first time you've ridden the Giro. You've ridden the Vuelta. I mean, how was that as an experience for you? Because, well, I know you, I would imagine you kind of enjoyed it, maybe apart from the suffering. Brutal course.
I loved it.
I mean, what actually, so the Giro, What could you draw from your endurance experience that you think maybe helped you in the Giro, if anything?
Yeah, I think the Giro is more than just the stages. Like it's probably the most difficult route of any road event. Because like the stages are long and mountainous. And that actually helps me in a way, because it kind of, once people get tired, I kind of stay the same.
Yeah.
But it's also like the transfers, the late nights. There's a lot that goes on outside the race that kind of, it's like the Giro, it's one big event. It's not like a series of stages, if that makes sense. The whole race slowly breaks you down.
Yeah.
Which I like that, because it kind of creates like an atmosphere of like one big event. And I think it just has all the best elements of road racing.
Yeah.
Like the way the stages are, there's no restriction as to what they're willing to do with a stage. which is, I think, is great. And I think the fans are like the most passionate in the world, and they're genuine fans. They really respect the event and the riders. And even like when you're at a hotel, you know, like I feel like a lot of the time you just kind of feel like a burden on the hotel that you're staying at, because like you've come in, you've taken up half the parking, you've got like 30 towels in the soigneur's room, and you're like, your chef's in the kitchen, like you're just like a real pain in the ass. But I feel like at that race, you know, they enjoy having you there. And they're excited to have you because you're part of the Giro.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan. I think of all the road events I've ever done, like the Giro is by far my favorite.
Yeah. There is a sense of epicness about it, isn't there? And as you say, although it is like 21 stages, it is more a collective of those kind of stages. And I think I rode it once. Didn't quite. I got to like stage 17, and I had to pull out. But I was in not a good way. So I suffered. I don't think I've ever suffered quite so much as in dazing succession as I did in the Giro. But what I loved about it was I felt really, really attached to, like culturally the race was kind of firmly. I know it's kind of it's commercial and that's important, but it seems kind of embedded within the kind of firmly embedded within the culture there, so you feel this real connection to the roads, to the countryside, to the people. There's a real closeness, isn't there? It's not like it doesn't stand away from the race from Italy and is kind of bolted on. There's nothing. No. It doesn't seem synthetic. It just seems super, super real, and it's a real cultural as well as physical and mental experience, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I imagine it's probably the closest thing you can get in cycling to playing like the Boxing Day test match in Australia, you know, like it's just part of the culture, and to take part in it is just such a privilege. And I always had this idea of like, when I looked at cyclists when I was younger, like when you're aspiring to be professional, when you hear someone had ridden a Giro, it was like, wow, you know, like that's the ultimate level of experience that you can have. To ride it, I was really, really excited to be able to ride it. And also, like, for my characteristics, especially those big mountain stages, and I was just coming off an ultra just before it, I didn't have that stress of, like those big, long, hard stages. I knew even if I was on a bad day and I got dropped early on, like, I had the capacity to just ride at a good speed and easily make the time cut.
Yeah.
Just because the way the courses are, it's so different than any other world tour race. So.
No, and actually, just looking at your finishing position is quite a cool one. 1-1-1. Did you not know?
No, that's
yeah. Fun. So in the Giro, obviously Teo won it, number one, and 11th. 11th was Domenico Pozzovivo, and then the best of the ones. 1-1-1 was yourself, Lachlan Morton. Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
So,
Yeah.
So there's a nice kind of symmetry to that, but it is a wonderful experience that you learn so much about yourself in something like that, you know, how much you're kind of willing to suffer and I guess, and how much you're kind of willing to commit. Although from what you're saying, you know, you had enough shape to actually get, although I would imagine you had your tough days, but it seems like it was well within you, given the way you'd kind of just tuned your body over the years, I guess.
Yeah, and also, like, I was, like, fresh off an ultra in Spain, and the idea of, like, heading out for 5 hours, it just seemed it was, like, super manageable.
Right.
Like, you know, even, like, if it was cold or whatever, I found myself, I'm like, oh, I'll just take a vest. Like, it doesn't really matter if I'm cold because, like, I'm going to be back in the bus in, like, 5 hours. You know, it's not, like, a big deal. So like I had that perspective, which sort of it served me well for that race.
That's a very, what, it's kind of almost upon us again, isn't it? Well, Lachlan, we're coming towards the end of the pod. There's a couple of things that I kind of wanted to ask you that I do ask everybody actually who comes on the pod. The first one is, could you please sum up all of the teams that you've ridden for in one word? So we'll start off with Chipotle. One word to sum up either your experience, your kind of lasting memory of the team. So just one word for Chipotle.
Fun.
Okay. Yeah. Moving on to your first stint at Garmin Sharp.
Oh, miserable.
Okay. Again, honest. That's good. Jelly Belly.
Transformative.
Oh, okay. I like that. That's never been used before. Transformative. I've had a couple of funds before. Dimension Data.
Interesting.
Okay. We've got covering a lot of, there's a nice range here, Lachlan, which is good.
Yeah.
Which is good. And then finally, EF.
Family, I think.
Ah, that's nice, mate. That's cool.
Yeah.
So we've got fun, miserable, transformative, interesting, and family. That's kind of like, I mean, it's really interesting that. I mean, because you made you were riding in the World Tour, as is well documented, and then you took a step back, didn't you? Do you look back and think, yeah, that was totally the right decision? Or in terms of your career path as a pro cyclist, is there anything you kind of want to change? Well, based on that kind of summary, are you pretty happy with where you are now?
I'm happy with where I am now. I know if I was trying to create like a World Tour winning bike rider out of myself, there's a lot of things I would do differently. But I'm sort of content with the way I get to ride now, so I don't really want to change anything.
Right.
I think there's things that I've done that I would advise younger riders who are trying to be successful probably not to do. But, yeah, that's just sort of what it is. I think there was a period where, like, I struggled with that because you could see, people you'd come up with having a lot of success in World Tour racing, and you'd sort of question yourself to be like, wait, did I make the right call?
Yeah.
But I've definitely come to peace with that, and I feel like I've got the best job in the world now. So,
That's a nice way to kind of wrap things up. Although it does appear, the light's flashing, mate, again. Here we go. We've got one more.
Random question alert.
Oh, we can't. Sorry, we've got one more on the way.
It is time for a random question.
Okay, we've got, the final random question, and then we'll let you get back to your day, Lachlan. Here we go. What is your biggest pet peeve? What really peeves you off?
I think my biggest pet peeve is like pro cyclists complaining about things. I think like it just has to happen at a race, you know, like nothing's ever perfect, so everyone has to complain. There's got to be one thing to complain about constantly.
Right.
And the reality is, like, we're so well looked after. It's ridiculous, you know, like at a race, it's like we're treated like we're babies, basically.
Right.
So, yeah, I'd say that's my pet peeve. And dive bombing.
Dive bombing, like, yeah, okay, yeah.
In descents. It used to be like, you know, you just didn't do it. It just wasn't done. And now if you want to hold position in a road race, it seems like you just have to do that. And I don't know why it's just fine now. But, yeah, it pisses me right off.
I think this will be like the 37th or 38th podcast I've done, obviously interviewed primarily pro bike riders. And when this kind of subject comes up, that is the modern era, you know, especially some of the slightly older riders, they said that there's a lot of respect that seems to have gone in the peloton. The racing is super exciting, but to be in amongst it's very, very competitive. And the kind of etiquette or an element of the etiquette that used to be there has definitely kind of fallen away, and it's really cut and thrust.
Yeah. Yeah, it has. And as you said, it's great for the spectators, I think. Because it does create more exciting racing. But as far as, like, you know, the whole push for rider safety, I think a lot of that we've just got to sort of take a look at ourselves, because ultimately I think we're creating the riders are creating more dangerous working environment than the race promoters, I think. But it's the change. I mean, cycling's evolving, and it had to evolve because it was such an old school backwards sport, you know?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, like, that was the sport that I sort of fell in love with. And that's going to change. But I think, it's just evolving, and it's exciting to sort of witness.
And really, to be fair, without blowing smoke up your ass, mate, you're one of the, in your own way, you're one of the riders that's helping it evolve, and you are kind of shining a light on different areas of the sport, of just riding, where you can be as competitive or as non-competitive as you want to be. Cycling is broad, you know. It's a very, very broad church, and there's no reason why, if anybody doesn't want to, they can. I mean, I understand that the beauty of the tribal element of it, the differences between the different disciplines and the type of people that do it, but ultimately we're still one family, aren't we? And it's really nice to kind of share experiences and ride different bikes, different sorts of terrain, and get those kind of different experiences.
Yeah, and I mean, it's all there to be enjoyed. And I think, like, men's professional cycling is such a small slither of, you know, the whole range of what riding bikes is, but yet it gets, like, such a massive portion of the coverage. I think the more you can enjoy all the different facets, you just get a richer experience, you know? And I think it's exciting to see guys doing different things, and people sort of enjoying more than just, you know, their one discipline.
Cool. Well, Lachlan, last question actually. What's next for you? What's on the menu for you next, mate?
I'm not sure. I might be going to the Giro, which starts pretty soon.
Which
I'm not sure. I also might not be.
Okay.
So I don't know. I might go to the Giro in a couple of weeks, or actually it might even be sooner than that.
It's kind of like not 10 days away.
Yeah. it's close enough that you can't really change anything anyway. I did a 23K trail running race on Sunday. Which I probably wouldn't have done if I'd.
I saw you did that with Mitch around the corner. But was that with Mitch Docker?
Yeah. Mitch like put me to the sword. But yeah, if I don't do that, I think I'll do something pretty long, like an ultra thing in July.
Okay.
And then I want to jump into a few mountain bike races in the next.
Cool.
In the next couple of weeks,
just with an eye of like looking towards Cape Epic at the end of the year. So
right, okay,
yeah, that's sort of what I got going on.
Great stuff, mate. Well, all the very best with that. If you do the Giro, I'll be there. So I shall.
Nice.
Maybe I know it's we're in this socially distant world. All the teams are in the bubbles, but I'll give you a wave if I see you, mate. But thanks for your time, Lachlan. It's been a joy. It really has. It's been a lot of fun. It's been a lot of fun talking to you. Take care of yourself and catch up soon, mate.
Okay. Thanks, mate. See ya.
What a great attitude Lachlan has, loving his riding and carving his own path. And I hope he continues to do so for many more years to come. This podcast is supported by Hot Chili. What's Hot Chili, I hear you ask? Good question. So let's ask the internet.
Hot Chili organises a variety of road and gravel cycling events in the UK and internationally, catering for riders of all abilities. Hot Chili has the cycling community at the heart of everything they do, and have a dedicated app for members to connect with each other.
Wow, sounds great. But of course, I did already know that. Visit hotchili.com or download the Hot Chili app and join the friendliest, funnest cycling community on the planet. Hot Chili is spelled HOTCHILLEE and .com is spelled full stop COM. Thanks as ever to Perry App Gwyneth for the podcast theme tune, and thanks to you for listening. Don't forget to like, subscribe and rate the pod, and why not recommend it to a clothing optional patron who may frequent your local aptly named beach. Finally, a massive thanks again to Lachlan for taking some time out of his busy schedule to chat with us today. Cheers all, stay safe, goodbye and take care.